All right. So are we now ready to go into our top fives, or do we have more TV that we want to rant about?
So ready.
No, let's go.
Okay. So I want to preface this by saying, and I think, I can't remember if it was Steve or Melissa that alluded to this at the beginning. Bill, I fucking hate you.
I alluded to that.
I don't think either of us alluded to that.
No, but I only to say that I don't really hate you. You know, I don't. I love you. This was way harder than I thought it would be. Mm. I was like Melissa. I'm like, I haven't seen a lot of stuff. Do I have enough material to do a top five? I probably could have done a top 10 and still not been satisfied. So, yeah.
Yeah, I could have too. Yeah. It's been actually a pretty decent year.
It has been a pretty decent year. So how do we want to do this? Do we want to do like our number fives, go around and then do it? Okay, sounds good. So who wants to start? Where do we start? Who starts?
Ooh, I'll start.
Okay, Steve, go for it.
All right, so my number five is, and I was wrestling between this film or Evil Dead Rise, but Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Is number five right now on my list. It's really hard to put this together, as you said. And there are so many other films out there, but I just, it's the capper on the perfect trilogy within the Marvel Cinematic Universe for me. It's the special heart that I really loved. I loved James Gunn's attachment to the story. And I really love that this one was Rocket's story, who is like my favorite of the Guardians. And it's so well told and such a great tale about friendship. And it really got me in the heart. And it feels like Marvel since kind of like the Avengers thing, like the Endgame and Infinity War and everything hasn't had anything really that special to it. And then this film comes along and kind of knocks you over. So that's why it's number five for me.
I'm actually surprised it's only number five. For some reason, I thought it may be higher on your list.
I'm actually surprised that the Evil Dead isn't on Steve Dead's list.
I know. Well, that it's, I was wrestling with it, right? I was wrestling with it right up to 7 o'clock, what I was going to do. And I just kind of, the heart just wins through. So sometimes, so it just kind of knocked Evil Dead, which is another film about family.
Melissa, we'll go to you. What's your number five?
Well, actually, my number five was also Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Again, what? I probably would not have watched this movie if Bill and Steve hadn't liked it so much. But I was actually really glad that I did. I too really enjoyed the focus on Rocket. And I also liked what they did with Peter and Zoe Saldana's character's name, I forgot.
Mora.
Mora, yeah, thank you. I like where they took that. I thought it was a smart thing. Because you get to play around with grief and relationship ending, and you know, do you get a reunion or not, kind of all that stuff. I thought was really, really well done. And I too, I found the emotional beats were a lot harder hitting than I expected from a superhero movie. So yeah. So this will be number five for me.
Bill, you're number five.
It's cool, Marina. You can not be on the Guardian bandwagon. It's fine.
I'm not
pretty clear about that, Bill.
Yeah, I'm not changing my mind.
It's fine. Number five for me is John Wick 4. Chad Stahelski, Keanu, Donnie freaking Yen, Skarsgård. And honestly, one of the best action films I've probably seen since maybe The Killer or Hard Boiled. We're talking like prime John Woo, like really kick-ass stuff here. It's the bar. And as I said before, I thought the Mission Impossible film suffered because I'd seen John Wick 4. Like, it is just that damn good. It's the best action film I've seen in a very long time. And I can't help but think that, something happens at the end, but they're still making these films. I don't care what anybody says. It made money. Donnie Yen could be in every film in the world doing his Singing in the Rain imitation. It's incredible. I'm shocked I have an action film on my top five because I'm not that guy, but this is just that film. And you can't help but bow down to its greatness.
It is higher on my list.
Nice.
And I must say, one of the highlights, and I had a lot of highlights of my trip to France, but perhaps the highest highlight of my trip was sitting on the stairs where they shot that scene. Oh. I'm not even joking. We legitimately walked the stairs because I needed to see the stairs, even though you could take the tram. I walked up those 207 stairs like this is happening. So I have a picture of myself sitting on the John Wick stairs. It was.
Yeah, but did anyone knock you down? How many times?
Dan. How long did it take you to get up there?
Dan actually did. Dan's like, maybe you're stuck down. I'm like, maybe not.
Did you get up by sunrise?
Yeah, I was going to say, was the sun coming up?
Yeah.
No, but it was really early in the morning. It was like 8:30 in the morning. So.
Wow.
But yeah, it is higher on my list. My number five, and I did wrestle with this a little bit as well. I went back and forth between this and Blackberry, to be totally honest. Because I'm like, I like them both quite a bit. But my number five was Megan. And I legitimately had to double check that it came out this year because I wasn't sure.
January 6th or something.
Yeah,
it was like the first release of the year.
Yeah, January 4th. Legitimately the first release of the year. This movie is so good. And I think the reason that I liked it so much, well, there's a couple of reasons I liked it so much. It's a familiar story that's told in a really interesting way. And technically, for me, part of the appeal was the way that they did the technical side of it. It's just, it's not often that you get to see a movie that could have easily been done in some other easy way where they've actually managed to mix and make it interesting from a production point of view in order to tell the story better. And for me, that was definitely part of the appeal. So I loved Megan. I thought it was a lot of fun and it doesn't take itself too seriously. And it looks really good. Technically, it's really outstanding. And I will definitely watch part two. Give me another one. I really liked Megan.
Is the same guy doing it, the Housebound guy? Is he still doing it?
Yes.
That's good. Good to hear.
Housebound rules.
Housebound is amazing.
It's pretty great.
Yeah.
Love it. Steve, what's your number four?
My number four, you just alluded to it. Blackberry is my number four film of the year. It may be one of the best Canadian films in a very, very, very long time. Everybody shines in this movie, but nothing harder than Matt Johnson and his writing and directing of this film. It moves so well. You were on the edge of your seat with these characters and still finding room to like laugh and have like absurd moments and everything. Glenn Howerton is a fucking force and he should be looked at for Academy Awards. Or just award season in general. Just Glenn Howerton. Just shop him out there. Because as soon as people see this movie, they'll be like, holy shit. But we always knew he had this in him.
Yeah, we all watch Sunny, don't we?
Yeah, exactly. We all know that one. But what a good goddamn movie. And that's not just because I'm friends with Jay Baruchel.
You're friends with Jay Baruchel?
Kinda. Like internet. Like we've met a few times. We chat now and then. I don't want to put that out on Friends Street, but like I've had conversations with him. I interviewed him a handful of years ago and we've managed to touch base with each other every now and then. He's a cool guy.
This is something I'm putting in my back pocket for later. This is good intel to know. Yeah, this is good intel to have. Yeah.
We actually connect on a lot. Like we're both crazy collectors and stuff. There's like nerd stuff that we connect on. It's weird. It's brother from another mother stuff. It's weird.
That's awesome.
It's probably my number six, which is pretty cool. I like the fact that it's not afraid to like shoot the film really ugly guerrilla style. It's super handheld. It's good stuff. And the soundtrack kicks ass.
Soundtrack, yes, it awesome. Does. It's got Elastica on it. Yeah. Come on.
I know, winning right there. I heard that. Right? I'm like, deep cut.
Yeah, exactly.
Melissa, what's your number four?
My number four, and this may be nostalgic because it was the first movie we talked about on the podcast, is actually Infinity Pool. Because nice. Mia Goth supremacy, that's why.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yes! John.
Oh my God.
James. I just, the premise of it is too cool. And I'm sorry, I love Brendan Cronenberg. And yeah, Mia just totally knocked the shit out of that role. And yeah, that's why it's number four on my list.
And who doesn't like to watch their clones die? Right?
Violent deaths.
And laugh about it with popcorn. And be like, look at them, idiots.
Oh man.
I must say that Maxine is probably one of my most anticipated films in the next year.
Yeah. Especially like Halsey's in it, and like there's like some interesting casting going on.
Ty West seems to be on fire right now. He's just killing it. Yeah. So
yeah.
He's having a pretty good run. I haven't been a huge fan of his work over the years. It's been really hit and miss, but I'm really curious to see what he does with that. But yeah, Mia is amazing.
I'm really hoping that there is like one of those, like when Maxine comes out on Blu-ray, that A24 does like a really beautiful like trilogy box set with them, like they did with Green Knight or Midsommar or anything like that. I'm putting that out into the world.
Manifesting,
make it happen.
Yeah, manifesting. Exactly.
I love it. I see. Bo is Afraid got announced on 4K, and it's not an A24 disc. I was furious.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I want my super collector like book thing like that I've got for Green Knight and Midsummer. And yeah.
And After Sun.
So, Bill, what's your number four?
My number four is How to Blow Up a Pipeline. You guys talked about it earlier, but I think it's also like one of the best edited films of the year. You were talking about the flashbacks, and every one of those flashbacks seemed to be a second earlier than it should have been, and it gave a really jarring effect. I love the plot, and I love that everybody had a purpose, and the use of these really great young actors. Like I hadn't seen Sasha Lane in a while. She's really good. Forrest Goodluck, really good. I thought it was super tight. Melissa said she didn't think there was enough tension in it, but I thought it was pretty tension filled. And
I just felt like it could have been ratcheted up a little higher. Yeah. But it's interesting you picked this movie because I actually looked it up and I thought it was a 2022 release, not a 2023 release. So I didn't think it was eligible for the top five.
I definitely saw it theatrically this year. Mm-hmm. And I also liked that it pissed some governments off. So that's pretty cool in my books.
Yeah. It's punk rock.
Yeah.
So I clearly, now I'm confused because I did this list yesterday. And I'm like, what movie was going to be my number five that I was trying to pick between? Because my number four is actually Blackberry.
Nice.
So now I'm like, what was that other movie that I was thinking about? I don't know.
Do we all have the same movies?
Probably.
Probably. Probably.
It's maybe. Maybe not.
Maybe but not, because you guys have seen a couple of things that I haven't seen. So yeah. I'm assuming that they will be on your list and they won't be on mine because I haven't seen them.
I'm going to get blockbustery in the next little bit. So,
I have nothing to add to the discussion we already had about Blackberry. It's my number four movie. It's really great. Number three, Mr. Steve.
Bo is Afraid is my number three film this year. Oh,
you finally saw it. Eh?
I did. This is the Greek Odyssey tragedy of a fucking loser. And the more I unpack it in my brain, the more I love it. It is a film where any fear that somebody has goes exactly how they think it's going to go. What bad can happen does happen. And it's hilarious and horrifying and to just completely unpredictable crescendos throughout the film. And I was hooked along the whole time. Like, everybody's so great in it too. Nathan Lane, like, I don't even understand the construction of this movie, and to know that Ari Aster originally wanted to do this movie first, and it's like, whoa, you got some broad fucking dreams, dude, because there's no way anybody's making this movie before you make anything that's blowing anybody's minds. Like, I can't see anybody taking a chance on this movie, and it just shows, I guess, the faith that A24 has in him, and I'm grateful they do. But I mean, Joaquin is incredible. He'll never be recognized for being as incredible as he is in this film. Dennis Menashe. there's the scene where Joaquin's on the phone and Dennis Menashe is just in the background. Me and my wife are howling at this scene, and we've all seen this movie, right?
Yep.
I have not.
Oh, you have not?
Well, that's fine.
There is a reveal that both my wife and I like put both our hands to our face and went, oh my God.
It was better in the theater, Steve. It was better in the theater.
It was so good in the theater.
We were laughing, but also like horrified. And like, I mean, and the fun thing, I mean, beyond it was unpacking it with my wife, because she's never seen an Astor film. And this was her first. And it's not usually her wheelhouse, but she was really interested in seeing this once she saw the trailer. So, and just unpacking it after and trying to go over theories and just kind of, it's so fascinating. It's endlessly fascinating. And I think that in it, that is an own makes it one of the most memorable movies this year for sure.
Okay, so I know Marina hasn't seen this film, so I'm going to be really vague. Do you think the person who signed off on that needle drop actually read the script?
No.
Because that is the greatest needle drop in the history of film.
It really is.
It really is. Incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will say this is higher on my list.
Higher on my list.
Okay. Okay.
So, Melissa, what's your number three?
So, okay, my number three, this might be a seemingly odd pick on the surface, because in terms of cinema, is it great cinema? I don't know. But I'm picking Pamela, A Love Story, because I think this was a documentary that really, it was really timely, I think, coming out after the Pam and Tommy terrible show. Well, I mean, it's interesting. I saw the show before I heard that she hadn't signed off on it. And I actually liked the show when I watched it. And then when I found out that she hadn't signed off on it, I was like, well, wait a minute, you guys are fucking her over again. Like, what is this? Like, you actually made an entire show about how she didn't consent to this being out in the world. And then you did a show that she didn't consent to being out in the world. Like, what the hell is wrong with you? So I really like that Pamela got her own platform to tell her story from her point of view, and that you could see that she has a tremendous amount of agency in her own life, that she's actually quite shrewd and quite smart about the moves that she's made and the way that she's managed her own persona and the way that she's coped with the things like the sex tape coming out and all these things. And I liked that her sons were involved in it. So I think it's a nice film. It's a good film that came out at a good time. And I think it's really interesting how we're going back and looking at all these like objects of really bad misogynistic hate in the 90s and kind of looking at how we assess these women, you know, Pamela, Monica Lewinsky, like there's, you know, all these women who were like hardcore targets for public ire and judgment, especially in the 90s and early 2000s. And it is really cool to see those, like all of that being reassessed now. So yeah, so that's my number three.
I agree. I actually thought the documentary was much better than I anticipated. Netflix is like, they just greenlight so much stuff, and so many of the documentaries are just kind of like, just passing. They're not garbage. They're just like not interesting. Like the subject matter might be interesting, but the documentaries themselves just are nothing to talk about. This one, I agree with you. I thought was not just the timing was good, but the subject matter is actually quite interesting. And the fact that she does get an opportunity to tell her story her own way and see that she's come out of it not unscathed, but maybe better because of it, I think is great. And I agree. I think that the fact that her family's involved, and she's really interesting as an individual, because she's both like this really strong, smart woman who is taking control of her life, but like on the other hand, she's also like this ditzy girl that just loves her shoes, which I think is just such a fun, like, it's a great, like, both a dichotomy and like this thing that like we all have that. Like I love handbags. Like I love a good handbag. Does it make me any dumber? No. Like it's just something that I like. So I appreciate that she has a literally a box in her backyard full of shoes. Like, I'm okay with that. If I could afford the handbags, I would have something in my backyard full of handbags. So it's all good. All good. I loved it. I thought it was really good.
Ladysmith's finest export.
Yep.
Right. Bill, what's your number three?
Because you guys haven't, as we talked about earlier, you guys haven't seen Past Lives, so I'm not going to go terribly in depth with it. But Celine Song's first film, and it's incredibly accomplished. The acting is incredible, including John Majaro, who plays the husband of the main protagonist, and he is incredible, Oscar worthy stuff. I can't wait for you guys to see this. I have no idea why they're like kind of burying this film. Like, Steve should have had a chance to see this. I think Melissa probably has had a chance, but just hasn't seen it. And but yeah, it's incredible. I hope we can talk about it when it finally comes out. But it's really good stuff. Run, don't walk.
I went to see Asteroid City, I was like, should I go see Past Lives or should I go see Asteroid City? And I went with Asteroid City, and now I wish I had gone the other way. But if I hadn't seen Asteroid City, I'd be wondering. So true. I don't know. No regrets, right? No regrets.
Never.
So my number three is Air.
Nice.
I hadn't even intended on watching, and I watched it because you guys really enjoyed it. And I've now seen it three times because I had to watch it with Dan when it ended up on Amazon Prime, because it's, I guess, distributed by Amazon, and it's really, really good. So good. I watched it three times. I don't know. I really love this movie. I think it's funny. It's really, really well made, and it's really well written. It just works.
The dialogue is so snappy.
It is.
So good.
It just works. Like, all of it just works. Like, Ben Affleck is hilarious. Matt Damon is great.
Chris Messina.
Yes.
Fantastic.
The power lawyer. So well done.
So funny.
And
so
great funny. Tension. Like, a movie with some really, really great tension. And he's Matthew something, the shoe designer.
Yeah. So like, good.
Such a great dreamer role. That's what I really liked about him, is he's just like such this he's got this pathway to what he wants. Like, I just love his mind, how he's working in that movie.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, we all know how this plays out. Like, it's Air Jordan, for fuck's sake. But like, the fact that it's this, they managed to keep the momentum going, and it is kind of like this kind of thriller, like, but how are they going to actually get him to sign? And I mean, I didn't know about the deal. I mean, I have no idea that Michael Jordan, it makes sense now, because I mean, the guy's like loaded, but I mean, I had no idea that they changed the industry. So I don't know, like, the whole thing just worked. It's one of these cases where it's a movie that's both like commercially accessible and really, really fucking good. So
no.
You know, Ben Affleck can still make movies.
Yep.
There's that. So it's my number three. Steve, what's your number two?
My number two is Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part One. I already gave my love letter to Cruise and Company about this film. So, I don't think I need to say anymore. It would be hyperbole if I went on. So, I love this movie a lot. And to see it on the big screen is like a big deal. And it's kind of like when we were talking about Indiana Jones, how people are really not going to see it and they're going to see it on Disney Plus. That bums me out too, because I feel like Indiana Jones is another one of those movies. It's like, you should see it on the big screen. Like, if you want to see it, you could buy a ticket and go see it. So yeah. I feel the same about Mission Impossible. Don't wait till Paramount Plus. Watch it on the big screen. Watch it on a big, big screen that I couldn't. Watch it on IMAX.
Yeah.
Do it before Tom loses it.
Melissa, what's your number two?
Okay, well, I just want to say there were a handful of movies that I have not seen, and this may be why they're not showing up in my top five. So Mission Impossible is one of them. The Spider-Man movie is another one. Past Lives is another one.
Did you see You People?
Yeah. No, with the CGI best kiss you'll see all year.
Thanks to your review, I skipped that one.
Good idea. Good idea. If you see the name Kenya Barres on it, don't watch it.
So my number two is Beau Is Afraid, because it is, whatever you think it is, it's way bigger and more over the top and crazier than you think. And we don't get a lot of movies made by men working through their mommy issues. And that's what this is in a big, big way. I'd love to meet Mrs. Astor because seems
like a nightmare.
Ari seems to have some things to work out. It's a pretty great movie. I love that people seem to either love it or hate it. I'm definitely on the loving side of that equation. That's my number two.
I would say it definitely took Ari a lot of sack to make that movie.
Oof. Rim shot.
Oh, Bill.
My number two is Beau is Afraid. And I'm going to be quite happy to say that I thought this was a masterpiece in 10 years when everybody celebrates this as a masterpiece. I also don't think it's incredibly hard to watch until about the 2-hour and 20-minute mark where it goes fucking apeshit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a lot about anxiety too, because I have a little bit of an anxiety problem and this kind of film kind of felt a little like me at times. It's pretty incredible. It's more like 1A and 1B. My number one and this one could switch by the end of the year. I just think number one is just a little bit more next level. And this is pretty next level.
You haven't seen Dune yet. I thought that was going to be your number one movie of the year.
We'll see. But no, this is incredible. I can't wait for you to see it, Marina, so we can have the full conversation, maybe.
We need a full conversation.
I still feel like we're like not talking about certain things because you haven't seen it. But it's incredible. My number two film.
Clearly, I need to see this because obviously it's going to be my, like, somewhere on this list if you all love, guys all love it so much. But maybe not. Maybe it's another Guardians.
No. I don't think so.
Unlikely.
The wound is still very fresh, Marina.
Let me shove the knife in it. Turn. Yeah. My number two is John Wick.
Yes.
Of course it fucking is. Because it's amazing and it's Keanu Reeves and I, like, give me an amazing action movie. I am all for it. I like the world building in these movies a lot. Like, they're so convoluted. Like, half the time I don't know what the hell they're talking about. I like need a guide. Like, I need that guide at the beginning of the book that tells you, like, who everybody is and what all the organizations are and what they all do. But I, like, there's just like an energy to these movies that just speak to my soul. I don't know. I love the fact that I don't really know what the hell is going on half the time because I don't understand how this universe works. And then there's Keanu Reeves being amazing. He's really a big part why I'm such a big fan of these movies because he's great and he's Keanu. And I feel vindicated. After years of quiet love for Keanu Reeves, I feel finally vindicated.
And for him to be a good human being too.
To boot.
Like an incredible human being.
Yeah, talking about the opposite of the monsters I was talking about earlier.
Right.
Like, that the most unproblematic star ever.
Yeah.
Right? Right.
I saw the world premiere of John Wick at Fantastic Fest.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
wow.
And Keanu was there.
Oh my God.
And he was amazing.
Did you touch him?
I did. He had bodyguards around him and he pushed the bodyguards away and walked through the crowd like Jesus and touched everything. Put his hands up in the sky and everybody was like high-fiving him as he walked through the crowd, then went to the press area and did his interviews. And we all thought it was just going to be like a really crappy like studio film that was put in Fantastic Fest to like time filler.
Yeah.
And then it became this incredible film that kicked everybody's ass. And it's honestly one of the most incredible film experiences I've ever had. So I've been a huge fan of this since. And I didn't think they could top John Wick 3. I thought John Wick 3 was pretty damn good.
This is the other thing. Like, they keep topping themselves. You think there's no way they can do any better than this. Like, this is you can't do any more. Like, what else can you do? And then they do something else and you're like, okay, well, there's that.
Yeah.
You could do that.
His name is Donnie Yen.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. 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 Pretty much. I just,
That's charm.
I just, I just have so much love for this franchise and the fact that they managed to keep it going and that it's so good every time.
Also, it was really nice having a dog again.
There's always that.
And he was a good dog. He was such a good dog.
Oh, maybe this is a theme. You'll see what I mean when we get to number one. But yeah, John Wick, chapter 4, my number 2. It'll probably stay in the top 5. I know the award season is usually pretty heavy on good stuff, but it's going to be somewhere in the top 10 for sure, because it's Johnny fucking Wick. Okay, number 1, Steve, should we give you a drum roll?
All right, let's do it.
That wasn't much of a drum roll.
No, didn't hear it. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is my number 1 film. I was like sucked into this. Like I was so into this that the world melted away. Like I was this was immersive storytelling with so much heart, brilliantly written characters that you have pre-establishedly cared about, but like they're able to further that. Exploring Gwen's character more. There's so much to this movie that I absolutely love. There's a Spider-Man popsicle that's chasing him. There's just like so many little things. It's number one because it's a film that I can always revisit again and again and again and again and pull something new from it every time and have a new thing that I see in it. And I just adore it. And even more than the Where's Waldo type stuff that I just kind of described there, but yeah, this is a be all and end all to me, and I'm so psyched to see what they do with the third.
I'm bummed. I haven't seen this yet. I'm very disappointed. I really need to make the time.
Yeah, it's a really special film for sure. Ah.
Melissa, you're number one.
Yeah, I have not seen the Spider-Man movie. Judging from your effusive praise, I'm sure it will be higher. It might have made my list. Who knows? Despite my getting tired of superhero movies. So my number one is Blackberry, because I think that Mike Johnson is one of the most innovative, creative, interesting filmmakers anywhere in the world, but particularly like the fact that this guy is Canadian when we get to claim him is kind of amazing. Everything that he's done, The Dirties, Operation Avalanche, Blackberry, they're all brilliant. He does period pieces incredibly, incredibly well. Like, I love how this is shot. I love that it's kind of that docu and that grainy 80s video VHS feel. Like, he's doing all that stuff on purpose, and I love it. Like, I love that aesthetic. And I love, he's also great as an actor in this film. He plays Doug terrifically well, and him and Jay Baruchel play off of each other so well. I really loved this movie, and it did make me like a little nostalgic for my BlackBerry, and like, cause I really like that keyboard. I did really like that keyboard. Now I am an iPhone girl all the way, but I used to be a CrackBerry fiend as well. So yeah.
Try
it with your thumbs.
What is this?
That was actually the hardest thing for me when I got my iPhone. I was like, it doesn't make the clicking sound. Damn it.
I love it. I am not unhappy about this selection. Bill, what's your number one?
Spider-Verse. I already said it. I think it's the best film I've seen since Dune. And quite honestly, it's sort of, it almost feels like it'd be like seeing Nosco, The Valley of the Wind, or My Neighbor Totoro on opening night. Just like, holy shit, that is a classic. Mm-hmm. That is going to be a classic that everybody talks about for the next 200 years. That is like a perfect film. Mm-hmm. Best film of the year.
Well, this is fun because 3 out of 4 of us have animated movies as our top movie of the year halfway through. Now, I haven't seen Spider-Man, but I saw a movie at Annecy that I'm not going to talk about too much because I think everybody's going to have a chance to see it very soon. But the way that I came into this was really interesting. So the movie that I watched that kicked my ass, and I watched some good stuff at Annecy, don't get me wrong, but I watched Pablo Berger's Robot Dreams. And this was very, like, it was not on anybody's list. It wasn't a movie anybody was talking about. Because Pablo Berger is not an animation guy. He directed Blancanieves a number of years ago. I don't know if you guys remember this. It was that Spanish black and white. Yeah, that Spanish black and white movie about a matador. Very period, like, made in that style. Really interesting. But he hasn't really done anything since. And then he comes out and makes an animated movie. And I'm like, okay, well, I like Blancanieves well enough. He's an interesting filmmaker. Now he's making an animated movie. What is this going to be? It is this movie that made me fucking cry is what it is. So it's based on, it's an adaptation of a children's book by Sarah Varon, who is a an American author. She does a lot of graphic novels, and she wrote this like kids book. It's ages like 8 to 12. And the story is about, it takes place in this universe that's kind of like our universe, but inhabited by animals. And so this dog buys, he's lonely, so he buys a robot friend. And then shit happens, and the robot friend, he gets separated from this robot friend. And after being depressed for a while, he moves on, and then the robot friend comes back. It doesn't sound like much. It's amazing. It's beautiful 2D hand-drawn animation. It's really emotionally resonant, and it's entirely told without dialogue. Like, there is zero talking in this entire movie. It blew my socks off. Blew my socks off enough that it's my number one movie of the year. I love this movie so much. I have been chasing this for Spark. Chasing. It's been picked up by Neon. I don't know if this is like widespread information at the moment, but it is definitely one to keep an eye on. It is really, really good.
I know about it because the IndieWire podcast people, Eric Cohn and Ann Thompson, talked about it because they saw it at Cannes.
Okay.
Yeah. So I knew about it. I'm glad it's awesome.
It's very, 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 very good. It was the movie that I walked out of the theater and I'm like, who do I contact? I need to see this movie again. It's amazing. It is definitely going to stick around in my top 10. And I highly recommend when you see it coming later this year, definitely make an appointment to see it. It's really amazing storytelling. It's very, very good.
Cool.
That's my number one. It might've been Spider-Man if I'd seen it. What do I know? I will say this about Spider-Man. I mean, there aren't a lot of movies, like, you can't kind of look at, you can look at the history of cinema and kind of go, oh, okay, this movie kind of changed the way things are done and things are made. And the first Spider-Verse movie really changed, I think, the conversation around animation and what animation could be going into like the future. Once Toy Story made that change with CG, I think when we got to Spider-Verse, we saw an opportunity to make movies that look different, because let's face it, all of the studio movies all look the same, and they're the movies that everybody sees. So you have like the studio films that Disney and Blue Sky and all of the studios are making in CG. And then you have like the anime that's coming out of Asia, which looks very different. Then you have the French films that have their own aesthetic. And I really felt like that Spider-Verse was a marker for, okay, we can do something fun and interesting and play with the medium in a way that nobody's seen before. And I love that it's pushing the envelope, and we're getting to see the side effects of that already, because TMNT is coming later this year. Mm-hmm. And it too looks totally different. Like, that is one of the movies that I'm really, really bummed I didn't get to see at Annecy, because they had a very limited screening and I only wanted to see it with Dan and he couldn't get in. I'm like, well, if you can't get in, I'm not going to see it. I'm still bummed. I should have gone. But it's nice to see that there is a little bit, like, the studios are feeling that they can play around a little bit more. And I mean, animation is a perfect way to do that. You can do so much. So it's great to see that there is some experimentation going on with some of the big studios that have, you know, the money to be able to fund some of this really fun stuff. And that's me. I'm getting off my soapbox.
Oh, no. No. Well said.
That's funny. You could have gone to see the Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem movie, and he could have had like a Owen Wilson Midnight in Paris, like, just kind of wander around, right? You could have found Salvador Dali.
I'll tell you guys a story once we get off the air about Dan's adventures in Annecy, because they're quite fun. But are there any, I mean, I know we've now talked for, this is now part two of the podcast, because otherwise it's going to be too long. But was there anything else that you were like really bummed to have to leave off your list? Because I know for me, it was really hard looking at the 75 movies I watched so far this year. And I was like, oh, but they're so good. So much good stuff. What do you mean only five?
I mean, a lot of the ones that you guys, but like John Wick 4, the like, it's just, it's like hard to, sometimes yeah. this is hard to differentiate what to put on it, and like my top five could change tomorrow,
yeah,
or next week, just the way I'm thinking about it.
Okay,
well, worst I think movie. My top five is gonna change pretty considerably. When I was looking at like what's coming up. There's some like serious films that I'm like super excited about.
Yeah,
Dune 2, you already talked about, Killers of the Flower Moon, Strange Way of Life, the new Almodovar film, May, December, new Todd Haynes. Like, man, there's like a lot of stuff coming out. Poor Things, Lanthimos.
Oh, Poor Things. I'm so excited.
Like, yeah, there's so much good stuff, I feel like, coming out before the end of the year. Like, yeah.
Our year end is going to be off. Just horrible. We're going to be like,
I was going to say,
nervous wrecks when we come onto the show.
Next like, it'll be a top 10 and then 30 honorable mentions.
Right? That's exactly what it's going to be. Like, well, Bill said it. This is a really, really, really great year so far.
This little director named Jonathan Glazer is finally coming out with a new film, too.
Oh, finally.
Yeah. And it's, sounds very grim. I can't wait.
Are they, are any of them not grim? Like, come on, he's just a fucking laser.
No,
they're all like, if you don't cry or feel really icky after them, then you have not watched the same movie.
I'm not going to tell you what it's about because you talked about it earlier and you had a little bit of a diatribe about it.
Nazis!
Correct.
So, but wait, which one, Sisu or the other, or Indiana Jones?
Yeah, no comment.
I'm off my pedestal.
I think the only film that I really wanted to put on my list was the Makoto Shinkai film Suzume.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm so bummed. I will get to it though.
Yeah, it's he's another incredible original filmmaker who just keeps on making really strange films that I just really kind of dig. And animation is definitely kicking right now. So
definitely.
No word. And as Steve said earlier, I really liked Evil Dead Rise. I thought it was a fun film.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Okay. Worst thing you guys have seen so Fast far X. this year. Oh,
wow. I've seen worse than Fast X. You people. White Men Can't Jump.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
There's a few. I mean I've refrained for years from making worst of the year lists. Because there's a certain point, I think it was during the pandemic and just during like mental, you know, where everyone's mentally breaking. I'm like, I don't want to shit on anybody's art, you know, but there are bad movies for sure. And I mean, we touched on the beginning. I really disliked The Flash, so
that was really soft pedaling your earlier statement about The Flash there, Steve.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah.
I just
we got kinder, gentler Steve Stubbing in the episode, in part two of this episode. Yeah.
Well, because I bled it off. I bled it off in the in the beginning, and I feel better about it now. And a little worried about the Schneider drones coming after me.
So, do you guys want to pick a film for next show?
Barbieheimer.
Yeah, Barbieheimer. Come on. Okay,
Barbieheimer.
My favorite thing about this whole Barbie and Oppenheimer opening on the same weekend, and I don't know if it's true because I just saw in passing, was some comment that Nolan was upset that Barbie was opening the same weekend. I'm like, why? Like, it's not nowhere close to the same demographic that's going to watch this.
Do you want to know why?
Why?
Because Barbie's going to beat it.
Yeah.
Probably.
I think they're both going to do well, though.
I think so, too. Like, I mean, because the reality of it is, Dan is, like, dying to watch Oppenheimer. I'm like, it's fucking 3 hours long. But this cast is amazing. And I know it's going to be good. So I'll probably see it. don't know when, but I am now committed to taking my 7-year-old niece to Barbie. So you know what I'm watching on Friday that it opens on the 21st? Fucking Barbie. Forget Oppenheimer. Barbie takes priority because I got to take a kid to see it.
I'm doing Barbie on the Thursday and then Oppenheimer on the Friday.
That's a smart thing to do. I want the double bill. It just sounds too fun to pass up. Do you start with Barbie or end with Barbie?
But keep in mind that Oppenheimer is 3 hours long.
I saw a tweet that says you get a plain black coffee. You go watch Oppenheimer. You come out. You have lunch. You go in. You go and watch Barbie, and then you go party. That's right.
Yeah, bring back the aqua. Look, just give me the new Charlie XCX single on repeat. I'm happy.
That soundtrack's already banging. It's got Aphex Twin. It's got Lambs on it. It's got so many different like out there groups. I'm like, and it's like Mark Ronson produced it. I'm like, yeah, let's do this. Yep. It's the age of soundtrack again. Let's do it.
You can take your niece to Barbie. It's rated PG.
I looked it up. PG. It's rated PG. Because she said to me, Tia, can you take me to see Barbie? I'm like, maybe. Because I'm like, I have no idea if I can take you to see Barbie. Is it going to be age appropriate? And then I looked it up and it's rated PG. So yes, I'm taking Chloe to see Barbie. And we're getting dressed up. So it's going to be all pink. Nice. She wants cotton candy. So I have to make sure the theater has cotton candy. Otherwise, I need to buy some.
We need pictures, both of your Barbie outfit. And also awesome. Pictures of you and Dan on the John Wick stairs in Paris.
Just me. Dan took the pictures.
Okay, can we at least go through the motions of me saying the movies and then
please do.
He's like, I'm lost without tether here.
Then we pick Bird Box Barcelona.
I'll Bird Box myself from that movie.
So July 14th, Theater Camp. We already talked about it. Looks really great.
Yeah.
I don't think it's opening at all around here. I don't know when I'm going to be able to see it.
Yeah, same here.
It sucks because I'm really looking forward to it. The last one I just talked about, Bird Box Barcelona, the sequel to the absolutely shit movie that people seem to love. I didn't get
a chance.
Great soundtrack.
Not a chance.
Yeah.
Great soundtrack.
Terrible film. July 21st, Barbenheimer.
Yes.
Yay!
Does anybody actually have we're obviously going to talk about them both, but like, does anybody actually like prefer one over the other?
I think Barbie would be a fun conversation.
Yeah.
Barbie all the way.
Okay. We'll keep that in mind. July 28th, Disney presents Haunted Mansion.
Directed by Justin Simien. I'm looking forward to this one.
That's not bad. And an A24 horror film called Talk to Me, which looks fucking incredible.
It looks like it could be absolutely terrifying. Yeah.
I can't wait for that one. August 2nd. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem.
Not so sleeper hit. I think the excitement's ramping.
Okay.
I love the cast. I love that they're actually teenage kids doing these voices. That trailer makes me laugh. The ooze thing. Ooze. I like that a lot. I like the AOA Debris, April O'Neil, because I love AOA Debris. Bottoms. Is Bottoms actually coming out this summer at all?
I haven't seen a date for
it. It's Ayo Debris and Rachel Sennott. Like,
yeah, looks
come
great.
On. Come on. And Marshawn Lynch in like a ridiculous looking role.
Nice.
I'm excited.
Also that day, Meg 2, The Trench.
Ben Wheatley.
It's a Ben Wheatley.
It's Ben Wheatley directed it.
It is.
Ben Wheatley.
Okay.
I'm in.
Damn it. Now I'm going to have to watch it.
I know. It just jumped.
But come on, it's Statham and a giant shark. I mean,
and the first movie's fun.
The first movie is actually like legitimately pretty good. I have another funny story I'll tell you guys off screen because it's so fun.
Here's the question: did Ben Wheatley take this for a reason or just for the check?
Clearly. Come on, check.
It's Universal, right? He did Free Fire for Universal, right?
Yeah, but. Ben Wheatley, he doesn't make normal films.
No, he doesn't. Well, In the Earth should tell anybody that he doesn't make normal films.
No.
Perhaps there's a reason. I mean, because the first one is, like, when you read the like what it's about, you're like, well, this is going to be stupid. And then it turns out to be, like, pretty decent. So maybe there's something here.
I think it's a movie that's going to take some chances.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I think so. Honestly didn't know it was Ben Wheatley, so I'm in. All of a sudden, I'm super in.
Yeah.
And on August 11th, because I have no idea when we're recording, Gran Turismo.
Neil Blomkamp, who lives in just like Naranjo, which is just a spit away from me.
Listen, so I had zero idea that Blomkamp had made this movie. I saw an ad for it the other day, and I was like, they've made a Gran Turismo movie? Like, what the actual fuck? The trailer actually looks pretty decent. Like, visually, it's going to be terrible.
I'm looking forward to David Harbour being a cantankerous trainer.
I'm okay with, I'm going to see it.
I love
it. Like, I watched the trailer and I'm like, okay, I'm going to see this thing. And then I saw this directed by Neil Blomkamp. I'm like, I'm really going to see this thing. Mm-hmm. It's going to be terrible, but also great.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted Neil to return to some sort of form.
I'm waiting for him to be making more movies. Like, I just don't know what happened to Oates. Like, if the studio isn't dead.
No,
the studio is still cool here. Yeah, so I don't know. Okay, sorry, we sidetracked again.
That is it. So Barbie?
Yeah, I'm thinking Barbie. Barbenheimer.
Okay.
I'm in for Barbieheimer.
Okay. That sounds, I knew it would be, but
Were you pulling for Oppenheimer, Bill?
I kind of was.
I kind of was too. But
yeah,
because we share a brain today. Bill and I share a brain today.
Plus, I'm like, Adrian and I are the only people that like Tenet. So
don't say that.
No, we
don't say that.
Says Marina is the person that had the biggest.
No, argument. You were. You stay in your hole of shame, Adrian. Stay down there.
Like, it's not like Marina and I have already had an argument on a podcast about Tenet, so she can't say anything.
Just might be liquored up to get back into it.
Hey, the segregation is gone. And it's quite late now.
I must say, every time Tenet comes on television, I just stop and check it out because it is such a wonderful film.
And then you watch it backwards.
Hey, Arshad's looks okay in those suits, but like, it's not a reason to watch it again.
This is the thing. It was on TV the other day and we watched like half an hour of it. And I'm like, fuck, Arshad looks good in this movie.
John David Washington wears a suit pretty well too.
Oh, yeah, he looks amazing in a suit. Yeah.
From his father.
Got good jeans. Yeah.
Right. So we will be back in a couple of weeks. It's not going to be a month before we record again, even though Bill did give us release dates well into the middle of August.
Just padding it up, just getting us ready.
Yeah, pretty much. And so we'll be back soon with another episode of After the Credits. Be sure to check out the website, atcpod.ca, for all the show notes. Guys, where can people find you? Steve, you're going last. Melissa?
Yep.
I still have an account on Twitter, but I never actually tweet anything. So I'm at Melzy Tweets there. And I'm on Letterboxd as Melissa McDowell, possibly. I can never remember what my handle is on Letterboxd.
It's linked. It's linked on the website.
Okay, great. So. Awesome. There you go.
Bill?
I am Bill Harris. I have another podcast that has recorded an episode, but don't tell anybody.
What?
Whoa. Cheating on us. Cheating. Okay.
Don't
technically, technically, he's cheating on the other show with us, but
but that's coming out next week. I am on Letterboxd. I am on Twitter. It's at SoundGem69. I own a lot of leather-bound books, and I like lamp. Thank you.
Also, can you just say it's Green Screen of Death podcast?
No,
just like
no,
plug the podcast, no,
I don't want to switch the brands, man.
It's not. Okay, it's cross-pollination. Okay. That's what it is.
Cross-pollination.
Yeah, watch me go.
I guess Steve always talks about Tremble, so I'll say the Green Screen of Death.
There we go.
Yeah, we're our first show in over a year and a half, I think.
The long wait. Finally.
Yeah.
And you can find me. Don't bother on Twitter because I don't tweet. I'm on Threads now. So there's that. But really, Instagram, the Marina 2. And what's the other thing? Letterboxd. That's the other thing. And Steve, where can people listen to your lovely voice?
Well, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, and Letterboxd at the Steve Will Dead. I am on The Shift with Shane Hewitt every Thursday at 11 p.m. Pacific time across Canada and 10 different markets. So just check your Chorus Entertainment radio network for that show. And I'm on Tremble, the horror podcast with my friends, Kurt and Taylor. We actually, the last episodes we did the 70s Invasions of the Body Snatchers, which, as the kids say, that movie still slaps. And Stepford Wives, which is a movie that I don't think slaps anymore. I don't know if it slapped in the first place. That's where you can find me now.
Steve also invented calzones.
Yes, but I don't tell anybody, much like the green screen. We don't tell anybody that one for a sense of repercussions.
So until next time.
Bye.